the only real thing that matters is the time that you spend with the people that you love. You can't take any of this with you in the most way. I mean, I think about it from the perspective of like being on your deathbed. You're never gonna be sitting there saying, man, I should have worked those extra Saturdays.
That's right.
Love Gangster with Adrian Boysell.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Love Gangster. I'm Adrian Boysell. I'm your host. Today, we're going to be meeting with a new guest, somebody you haven't met yet before, somebody I've never interviewed before. My friend Mario is coming in. He's actually a friend and client of mine who I've worked with now for a few years. And as time has gone on, I've built this reputation and relationship and trust with these guys at this law firm. I've grown an affinity for this person. And we were talking about business stuff and a little bit of life stuff as we usually do. And I brought up the Love Gangster show and he's like, I want to be on your show. And you know, in those moments, sometimes you will brush it off and you go, cool, yeah, sounds great. But there was a little stirring in me and I felt a little voice calling me that we needed to have a conversation and he needed to be on this show. And so I know that there's something special coming. I'm going into this almost completely blind. No idea how this is going to turn out, but that's the beauty in life. Sometimes you just got to wing it and see what happens. And so this could go incredibly great or it could go incredibly bad.
Buckle
we're
going to
find out. So with that all being said, let me introduce my guest, Mario. What's up, brother?
Hanging in there, man.
Heck yeah, good to see you. So why don't you introduce yourself, give the audience a little bit of background about you.
Well, forgive me if I'm a little awkward on camera. I guess I kind of forgot I might be on camera this week or today. Mario Salvagno, originally from Davis, but don't hold it against me, as I always say. Parents were kind enough to raise me there, went to UC Santa Barbara,
wow.
And graduated miraculously in 4 years on time these days, and was thinking about going to law school, walked right up to the line of applying. And then that's where I met Justin Gingery of Gingery Hammer Schneiderman, my current employer. And after some winding career paths, happened to reunite with him at a fortuitous moment for both of us. And now I'm doing intake coordinating for the man. And so, yeah, quite a lot of twists and turns, but you know, learning from life and stuff as you go, just piecing it together and being along for the ride and enjoying it, right?
So what was your upbringing like?
Oh, Davis, man, it's the way I say it, it's the perfect place to be from, right? So it's definitely a bubble.
Yeah.
Anybody who says not is totally lying. But so, you know, no real crime. The biggest crime is like someone stealing your bike.
I was going to say, right? There's going to be something involving a bike.
For sure. That's it. And the schools are great, right? And you're basically, right, you're only everything in this area, right? You're like 2 hours from everything you want to do, the beach, the mountains, even how you can get to the desert, the forest, whatever.
Everything.
Didn't do enough of that. Wasn't the most outdoorsy growing up. But so Davis was great, man. Made a lot of friends. Didn't even apply to UC Davis because I said, love this place, but I got to go.
Yeah.
Funny enough, UCSB ranks like tied with them really consistently in terms of like academic ratings and stuff. Although I think it's really funny because as far as like quality of life stuff, I think UCSB's got the edge. Had a bunch of people visit, right? And they go, I don't know how you guys ever go to class with this beach. This party scene, like what's,
that's right.
How do you guys ever make it?
That's right.
And so I really appreciated this sort of work hard, play hard ethos. So I try to kind of carry that through, you know, it's like, hey, we can, you know, kick butt in the classroom and like do our studies, but also get out there and appreciate life and soak it all in and on the beautiful sunsets of Isla Vista, as it is, we're all.
Nice.
And one of the best underrated things, just as a small aside, is probably one of the best underrated things is that everyone lives there in IV, as they call it, right next to campus. All of your homies are your neighbors.
Oh, wow.
So you can just skate on down, walk down, bike down to wherever you want to go. And real sense of kind of community. And that was just some really good years. And made a lot of friends, of course, and learned enough of why I probably didn't want to be an attorney.
Okay.
From being with in PAD, the pre-law fraternity.
Got it.
And a lot of guests and lawyers and stuff.
So you were in a fraternity, huh?
All right. Well, here's the thing. So you don't actually need to be in a fraternity at UC Santa Barbara to party. And technically it's a fraternity, but it's basically a pre-law club.
Got
so
it.
It's co-ed, pre-law. We don't have a house. It's academic.
Okay.
Bunch of type A nerds.
So tell me about your family. Do you have a big family, small family?
So relatively small, surprisingly so, for half Mexican, half Italian, such as myself. The mom's side is more so in Sacramento area. Dad's is a little more spread out. He's the Italian, she's the Mexican. And So I got both of the best foods. Let's just be honest. Exactly both of the best cuisines.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, that's some good food.
No, Mom. And Mom can cook anything. Oh God. I'm spoiled, man. I got the belly to prove it.
So siblings?
Yeah, one older brother.
Okay.
Really interesting cat. He's 6 years older than I. And he's got kind of the genius IQ. He should probably be working for NASA. Mm. He's currently not, but you know, that's a topic for another day.
Is he an entrepreneur?
He's not. Okay. He doesn't have that kind of go-getting spirit, but I gotta say, one of my life goals is to kind of harness that, put him in a position, because often people with that kind of intellect, right, it's a blessing and a curse. You know, you're so up there that you're not at all down here, really.
That's true.
And he went to MIT. For math. Wow. So, and he got published in their little journal and stuff. So that's the kind of brain we're talking about. So we have fascinating conversations about a lot of intersecting, you know, random things. He's brilliant, but he just doesn't, I wish I could put him in a circumstance in which he could thrive and fully utilize that beautiful brain of his.
That's beautiful.
So that's a life side goal. I still got to figure out where that could line in. But parents were great. They were a little older. Mom was almost 40 when she had me.
Oh, wow.
And I like to think that sort of their maturity, composure, the advanced age kind of mostly came into us.
So some healthy parenting then.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much, I mean, no complaints at all, honestly. I joke with Justin, you know, who has his own parental stuff going on, as everyone does, right?
We all do.
And families are never perfect. They're always got some drama, but I won the lottery with my parents. They're amazing people. You'll probably meet them sometime. They come out here occasionally.
That would be neat. Yeah, I think what's interesting about to me is it what stands out to me is there's people that go through traumatic childhoods like I had, right? Mm-hmm. Jordan had a rough childhood. He had an amazing mom. But there are other people who have really great childhoods, right? You got an older brother, pretty stable, grew up in a nice area, and they often feel like they don't have a crazy story to go tell. They don't have a crazy thing to go share. But the reality is you don't have to go through all the work and all the healing and all the stuff to get rid of all the roadblocks that were put in our ways, the bad programming, right?
Right.
So how do you feel that that has given you an advantage in your career and in your personal life by having that solid foundation and upbringing?
You know, so it's interesting. That's a good question. What I think about is, you know, growing up in Davis, you know, there's kids that get into, you know, drinking and drugs and stuff a little early, as with anywhere, right? And I remember looking at them, obviously I judged them a little bit. I was just like, come on, you know, everyone wants to party a little bit, right? Get the taste before college. But I remember being like, man, you guys are going to piss away this opportunity. Like, you know, not to get graphic, but I think people in the rest of the world would do obscene things, like unforgivable things, to have the amount of privilege essentially that we have, that we just get by being born in a place where they value education, there's not a lot of crime, it's super bike friendly environment, just all that jazz. And so I remember looking at it being like, I almost feel indebted to those who didn't get this to make the most of this, or at least the best I can, of course, right?
That's interesting.
I have to put forth that.
So there's a lack of entitlement that it sounds like you have. A lot of people are very entitled.
I try to check myself. You know, my mom goes the good part about that too. You know, just say, hey, where are you going there, bud?
No, that's huge. Okay, so that's really helpful. So personally, on your personal side of your life, in going from, you know, college to your career that you're in today, kind of fill me in the gaps on that of like, what did you do leading up to Gingery? What kind of jobs have you done?
It's a winding path that it does have one particular through line I'll share, but it's been interesting. So after college, when I was in PAD, right, they brought in a lot of judges and lawyers to talk about their experience, and that was super valuable, learning what it actually looks like. And, you know, being around a bunch of people that I knew were definitely going to law school, it didn't exactly put me back onto it as much. And so, you know, moved home after college and was like, okay, well, I got this history degree. I guess I got to teach or I got to go to law school. So I was like, I guess I'm going to law school. So I was working at another firm where I met Justin, like I said, and just like as a file clerk, and saw really the inner cogs of the machine, as we call it. And it'll chew you up and spit you out.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of remember thinking, you know, I was applying and getting towards it at the same time and seeing kind of what this looked like. And basically, it was kind of interesting. You might probably appreciate this. So for the law school application, obviously, you need like letters of recommendation. You need your transcripts, all that jazz. But you also need a personal statement. And one of my favorite pre-writing techniques in college was just stream of consciousness. and I'm a pretty good typist. Mom used to be a court reporter, so I always wanted to catch up to her speed. And so, so I would just kind of lay back, put on some good tunes, and just stream of consciousness, that thing. So I did that for the pre-write, or excuse me, the personal statement, and I ended up doing it twice. And basically both times I wrote why I didn't want to go to law school, or really be an attorney at least.
Wow.
And so I said, well, maybe I should listen to this inner voice.
Yeah.
And possibly all of the attorneys that I've spoken with that have tried to talk me out of it, or said that, yeah, if I could do it over again, I'm not sure I would.
Wow.
A lot of debt, you know, you got to work with attorneys.
Yeah.
These are the only guys I probably could work with. That's what I always joke when I'm talking to intakes, right? I'm just like, I don't think I could work for any other firm, to tell you the truth.
So most people would be drawn to being an attorney. I know that was an element for me. I wanted to be an attorney as a kid, 13, 14 years old.
Sure.
I was like, I want to be an attorney someday. But the draw is be, you know, you make $500, $600,000, $1,500 an hour, right? So what made you choose, what is it about your personality that made you choose the path of not being an attorney and maybe not making quite as much as attorneys make versus going the path that you do now?
That wistful look I just had was thinking of my Granny Goose, as I called her. I lost her just before the pandemic, and you know, it's all bad from there. It's all downhill from there as far as I'm concerned. But she was just a fantastic woman. The women in my family are super strong. My mom, you know, apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah.
And very wise, like street smart, ladies, you know, kick butt, you know, whirling tornadoes of, you know, restoring order, like the cleaning tornadoes, as I kind of say. And anyway, one of her isms, colloquialisms that occasionally she would say, she loved to go to the, you know, the tribal casinos around here and stuff, you know, pull the slot machines. That was her jam. And she was a lucky gal, man. She would just get these jackpots. There was just like, what? You know, she gave plenty of it back, you know, here and there of all these visits. But she'd get these big old checks. Like, whoa, okay. All right, Goose. And I would just be like, hey, I'm going to come pick you up. Let's take that home. Go give it back. And one of the things I think because of that perspective that she would say is, it's only money, honey.
It's only money, honey. That's good.
And I just, you know, it's just, it's a simple thing. And, you know, not to, you know, at all say it like, oh, you don't need money and all that kind of
powerful
tool,
catchy
stuff. But, you know, because there's real people suffering and money does solve a lot of problems. A lot of problems come from not having it. So I'm not making light of any of that. But it's a perspective as far as I think going forward and what you want in your life, you know, sort of towards the balance, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, certain things in life are going to cost a little more than you want. But I don't think you want to let money always guide your choices because you can always make more.
That's right.
You know, it's the circulation. That's the measure of GDP, right? It's how fast the money be moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, listening to that, it's more about, it's less about the, you know, it's kind of like they say, right, as well, the it's not the years in your life, but the life in your years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing.
The fulfillment and what's in the dash, right? You get the day you're born and the day you die and that dash in between.
The dash,
like right? That. So I think that's really powerful. So mindsets around money, I think there's a lot of people that struggle with that and even subconsciously don't realize it. As soon as they get money, they do something, they sabotage themselves.
Right.
Their subconscious, not even their conscious mind, but their subconscious mind will do things to throw it away and to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Making a bad investment, buying an expensive car, with an expensive monthly payment, over leveraging themselves on a property, whatever that is, right? Investing into a business, buying a bunch of stock, like whatever the situation is, you know, they'll find ways to get rid of it because they think it's bad.
Hmm.
So it sounds like you didn't have that money, that issue towards money. It's only money, but you still have obviously a healthy relationship with money, right? To be able to live the life that you have and to live in the part of the country that you're living in, right? It's not cheap.
I totally right. You know, and this is, I realized all this before we even like the kind of popularized language around privilege and stuff like that. but you know, without that word, I kind of realized I did have a ton of it and I fully acknowledge it. I joke, I'm like, yeah, I'm a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
I mean, relatively speaking, 99.9% of the percentile, whatever in the world, I'm unbelievably lucky. And I try to check myself with that knowledge too. And, but I owe a lot of it again to my parents that, you know, they're not just like, you know, billionaires or anything, of course.
Yeah.
And you know, they don't spend lavishly. Obviously we had a really nice house and stuff like that, but, you know, Hondas,
Yeah.
We're driving Honda, you know, nothing flashy.
Reliable and smart.
And something mom said, and similar enough to my grandma, is, you know, she said, she would say, just because you have money doesn't mean you got to spend it. So it's like a balancing with that, you know, you don't have to just let it burn that hole in your pocket just go make some silly decisions. So
a dollar saved is a dollar earned.
I like that one. Yeah. And granted, I, you know, everyone struggles with it. I still be, it do be burning holes in my pocket sometimes.
Oh, we all have that. One of my mentors told me, especially when it comes to cash flow, one of my mentors told me fairly recently about a dollar saved is a dollar earned, and the actual true value of that. So if you have a business that operates, let's just use random numbers.
Yeah.
You have a business that does $1 million a year, and you have a 50% margin, so you got $500,000 in profit, right? But now all of a sudden you're able to cut $10,000 a month. Because you have a 50% margin, that's like adding $40,000 back to your income, right? Because you're getting that 50%. Or whatever that would be, not $40,000, $30,000, right? So it's actually like saving $30,000. It's not just the 20 that you're 10 you're saving, you're you're getting 20 or 30,000, whatever that number, the math works out to be. And so the actual value of saving money is based on the profit margins that you have in your business. So I started looking at, you know, these subscriptions like, oh, it's only $10, almost $20. Well, for me to make, if, you know, if I'm going to operate, if I collect $100 from somebody and I got a 50% margin, I make 50, right? That's a pretty significant margin gap there between what I'm saving and what I'm earning there. So I think there's a valuable way to look at money of like saving money as well as making money. I think a lot of people are focused on just make more money when you can actually reduce some of your costs.
Yeah, it goes both ways, right?
It goes both ways. So kind of fast forwarding then into more of current times where you're at now.
Yeah.
Are you married, kids, family? Tell me
none
about that.
None of the above.
None of the above.
Free single, agent, my man.
Single as a Pringle.
You could say that again.
There you go.
Yeah, so I mean, well, I guess just buttoning up the last one about the journey there. I walked up to the line, didn't go with it, kind of eschewed the rest of that whole thing because I saw the inner workings of that firm. I said, that's how it is at the top of any area of law. I don't really want anything to do with all that, so I'm good. So I kind of cast it about. I worked in some local politics in Davis, which is its own particular kind of beast.
Yeah.
I have a very weird, very isolated niche skill set to working politics in that town.
Yeah.
Won a local development campaign for like a mixed-use thing for research and development and like student housing, which is desperately needed. So I worked on that campaign. We had to do it twice. We won that. Other local politics there. I ended up working for my friend's parents' local, you know, delivery dispensary, which was an interesting. You know, as soon as legalization, basically, that they came to town. And so got to see some startup angles from there and what it takes to really start a business, especially in a kind of an interesting niche there as well.
Yeah.
And so worked that, but I also helped kind of get it through. It needed some advocating through the local government process as well. And then kind of when that, when I parted ways from that company at an interesting juncture, actually right before Granny Goose was passing, I basically was like, hey, I need to go, you know, do this hospice thing at home. And so I was really, really grateful to have that moment to just to be with her. And, you know, actually this is a pro tip here. I got it from my little sis, Shiva. Shouts to Shiva. Her tip when a grandparent or someone, a loved one that you know is about to pass in this hospice situation, videos and pictures for sure, even just audio recordings.
Yeah.
Just like put the audio recorder and just chat and ask the questions that you never thought to ask or that you thought you knew, and you'll have those, and those will be some of the most cherished memories that you'll have.
Such a genuine and authentic way to capture somebody's legacy in life and
the voice.
Some of those moments, yeah.
And the memories, and so I have some of those tapes for right here on my phone.
That's
love that.
Really neat.
And so after that, you know, I was kind of casting about, and it just so happened Justin needed an intake coordinator. And he said, hey, you know, what's up? And I said, well, I've literally never been on time, and I take more than a handful of bathroom breaks a day. So he goes, I don't care, man. As long as the work gets done, get in here. So, and he and I are just simpatico. It's wild, you know, very serendipitous the way you meet people like your chosen family.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Justin and I almost immediately we could just tell that we were kin.
Yep.
You're just right there, same page almost every time.
Yeah.
And so very fortunate to work with him. Such an empathetic guy. He does so much good work in the community, just helping people. He gives out his cell phone to all of his clients. It's just so wild. He's kind of cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs for that, frankly, if I'm being honest.
He steps it up to a whole different level that you'll never see another lawyer. And from the first moment I met him, you know, at the other law firm that he was at before, till, you know, even before my huge trials and tribulations I had in 2022, it was just like,
is this guy for real? Like, these people like this just don't hardly exist anymore.
They don't make them like that anymore, man. And he's definitely a really special person. I'm super grateful to work for. And, you know, because of my, you know, I don't, he knows very upfront. I'm very rarely shy with my opinions.
That's right.
He knows how I feel about the law and the practice of law, most importantly, because here's another thing people don't really understand is that we don't have a justice system. We have a legal system. So you never really walk out of it feeling any kind of justice been had.
Exactly. You pay a bunch of lawyers a bunch of money usually, and they're the ones that come out with the with the full pockets at the end.
The lawyers are the ones always winning in the middle, and then, you know, the legal system, of course, can be abused by people who know just enough to be dangerous, or by companies that have enough to just buy and overwhelm you with legal force.
And discoveries and,
just bury you and that stuff. And so I've seen this up close and personal. Now, my mom actually used to work in law. She was a medical malpractice defense firm that she was in for a long time.
Wow.
Heavy stuff. She worked on, like, bad baby cases is what they say.
Wow.
And there was a whole, you know, string of those suits up north back in the day. And she loved that kind of work. She loved the, I don't want to say gamesmanship, but the chess match of it. And that is a part of the law that I can appreciate. Every case is different.
Yeah.
It keeps you interested that way. There's a lots of, you know, the tactics that can be so smart. And it's beautiful to watch Justin and the boys over there, Jeff, and do their behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
They were just talking about some motion when I was leaving.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hey, bad time. I'm going to skip.
Exactly.
I got to go be on the pod.
There you go.
And so, just seeing what that's like and knowing that that can be the good part of the law, but he knows I don't really love a lot of the rest of it, and he understands that, and he knows that, but he kind of put me in this position because, well, A, I never shut up anyway, as I joke, so I might as well be on the phones.
That's right.
And I actually give a hoot about people. I give
that's
a
right.
crap,
you
and I
care.
Legitimately want to help. So even people that call in with stuff that I have no idea, we don't at all practice.
Yeah.
I'll just go to Justin and be like, what would you do if this was your cousin? Mm. What would you tell him to do?
Whoa, that's a great perspective to bring into especially into a law firm where, you know, a lot of people treat lawyers as ambulance chasers, right? They treat them like they're just out for the buck. And that's definitely not the case with Justin and Gingery and, you know, and the whole firm in itself and clearly with you. So I'm curious, those values that you have that you bring to Gingery and to the team, right, have probably carried you through your life and into your career now. What are some of those values, some of the things that lend to that perspective that you bring of, like, you know, what if this was your aunt, or what if this was your mom, or this is what if this is your cousin? What are some of the things that like you hold near and dear as, like, that are non-negotiables in your life?
It's hard to, I guess, put some words on it, but I'll describe it, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I feel like there's so many cliches, and it's hard to avoid a lot of
integrity,
them,
right?
You know, a lot of these things, you know, the colloquialisms, I kind of joke that, you know, I've collected all these sayings that have persisted over hundreds, if not thousands of years, down a verbal tradition. There's bits of nuggets of wisdom in all of them, and you just need to know when to deploy them.
That's right.
And so the journey of maturing and aging is knowing when to deploy and where and in what circumstance. So, you know, pardon me being corny, but can't help it. So as far as the values and stuff, I had a moment, series of moments back in the day, and you know, some of those aha moments that you say, right?
Yep.
And as I believe Oprah said, where I just found in a really visceral way, just kind of ended up realizing, I guess, sort of along the lines of what my mom and grandma were saying, is that you can't take any of this with you, right?
Yep.
We're all headed to the same spot, at least physically, 6 feet under, whatever you want to do with your body.
That's right.
Personally, I'd like to be turned into some mulch for a tree and just watch me bloom.
There you go.
But yeah, it's you can't take any of it with you. So really, in a sense, like I said, you know, the hustle grind type stuff and just money for money's sake and infinite counting and just trying to just up, chase that status and all that. What's the point? I don't see it. And so as far as I can tell, the only real thing that matters is the time that you spend with the people that you love. In the most way. I mean, I think about it from the perspective of, like, being on your deathbed. You're never going to be sitting there saying, man, I should have worked those extra Saturdays.
That's right. Those are not the statements.
I wish I would have had that other car. It's like, no, you don't give a single hoot about any of that at all. And you're thinking about all those memories you had. with all those people. And so, you know, sometimes I try to do that on a more micro basis. I'll like, you know, at a fork in the road, I'll try to say, okay, in the future, looking back, which decision would I be grateful for having made and why, kind of
That's
a thing.
Powerful.
And so similarly with that deathbed kind of perspective, okay, I guess that's probably the way to live and just...
I just remember there's a book or a quote, something like that. It's like, start with the end in mind.
Yeah.
Right? And so that sounds like with the foundation and with your parents and what they built with you, as you operate your life with the end in mind, which I think is really powerful, but not losing touch with the present, right?
Get the means to justify that end, brother.
That's right.
And something
being,
like that.
Being present. And there's never going to be another moment in all eternity that will exist like this, where I'm sitting, what I'm wearing, what you're wearing, right? It's a very powerful that we can co-create and do this thing, create this podcast at this moment and release it and share this wisdom and the way that we're expressing our words. Like, there's just so much power in the present that I feel like people have lost sight of. And I think that's probably what caused me to want to just like almost instantaneously have you on the show. It was like, I want to bring some of that to the forefront of what it is that I do as the Love Gangster, and bringing on Love Gangsters is like, stay focused on the present and right now. So many people are future pacing or living in the past, or they're looking ahead or they're looking behind them. They're not focused on the now. That's one thing I've always enjoyed about our conversations is when you and I are talking, there's nothing else going on. You're not distracted. You're just not on your phone, and you're not trying to rush off the phone. You're not it's just focused on having a good quality, authentic conversation.
Well, and that, you know, again, the hokey, the colloquialism about, you know, that's why they call it the present. It is a gift.
It
takes a lot of, I think, again, that same sort of focus to take that deep breath, center yourself, and just be where you are fully. And, you know, the trick from therapy, right, about what do you smell, what do you see, what do you hear, all the senses and all the, what do you feel? That's one way to kind of ground, literally feel your feet on the ground. And what does that feel like to feel that present? And, yeah, the unique opportunities, right? I remember the Garden State moment where she's like, we can do something right now that has never happened before and will never happen again. And then she just does a weird little dance and screams.
Exactly.
And he's like, wow. And it'll never happen again.
That's right.
And even if I do it right now, it's a different thing.
It's going to be different.
I already did a similar thing, but it's going to be different.
And that's a powerful gift.
It's really, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's so easy to lose track of, though, because, you know, and this is kind of what I think I was talking about with the money struggles and stuff earlier. It was like, sometimes it does feel like things are, broadly speaking, in such a way that designed or happened in such a way that the rat race of it all, the grind that it is and it takes to kind of survive these days, is Love. Almost intentionally designed to rob you of the present, to keep you out of it.
That's
you
right.
know, look at all that stuff that you did that was awkward. Think about all that stuff. Worry about the future. Worry about
those
bills.
This is what you need next. And this is what your neighbors bought. And now you need a Tesla. And it's always something, right?
It's always something. Oh, you almost got dangling that stuff and Instagram and stuff, all that on there. So it is. So I try not to also, you know, you have to be empathetic with people as well. Mm-hmm. Everyone having their own journey, as they say. But you have to just be empathetic and understanding that people are on their own journey, will take their time to understand these things, and leading by example kind of a thing, right?
So let me ask you a little harder of a question, because I think this is going to be one to throw at you. It'll be interesting to see your response on this. What breaks your heart in the world?
No, don't get me started, man. It's the lack of compassion. It really is. The lack of empathy, like legitimate understanding and recognition of other people's humanity. And it's easy sometimes as well through the media, whatever you end up watching, to see the other. And because fear is such a powerful ruling tool for the political, the elites and everybody, it's, you know, fear that other rather than, oh, I used to joke, especially having traveled abroad a little bit, not as much as I'd like, but, you know, meeting people all over, you're like, man, we're all the same everywhere. I was like, you know, if you could get some, you know, German or person from the rest of the world and get it together with a guy in Kansas who's never left his home county, and they're sitting together in a bar, and that person's probably going to have to speak English, let's be real, instead of the other way around, speaking German or whatever.
Exactly.
And they would sit down and have a beer, and, you know, 9.9 times out of 10, they're going to sit there and they're going to realize they have more in common than not. We all just want to survive, have enough to be comfortable, and enough to spend time with our family, the people that we love.
That's right.
It really, you know, it in some instances, it can be that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other stuff to distract us from that point. But I do really think that in that instance, it should be that simple. And you can't lose track of that simple truth. Mm-hmm. You got to use that as sort of a guiding light. It is, you know, so I have, so can I tell you a little bit of my life philosophy here? People usually enjoy a little bit, sort of, I call it op-denialism. Or op-denialist, so optimist with nihilist, which obviously doesn't make any sense. It's fundamentally contradictory, but
that's what works. Love gangster.
Oxymoron. Yeah, exactly. It's basically where if nothing really matters long term anyway, kind of a thing. If you subscribe to that kind of thing, and you know, it can be really easy to take it personally. That you know, we feel really small in this universe, grains of sand. Not even grains of sand on the beach of the universe, right? Yeah. People take that super personally. I find it kind of liberating. It's like, oh, okay, well,
yeah,
that's fine.
Exactly.
I can just do what I want. Yeah. So that's how I take it. It's like, okay, well, it's a relief. It's a burden lifting, because it's like, okay, well, if this doesn't even really that matter that much, barring of course the obvious, like as long as you're not hurting people, as long as you can sleep at night, you know, all that granted, nothing really matters anyway. You might as well enjoy the time you've got.
That's right, because we don't know.
Everyone has got their different beliefs and what happens after and all that stuff, but you know, pretty confident we can't take any of this with us again.
That's right.
So focus on the present, be here. Be liberated by the fact that probably ultimately doesn't matter. You know, the phrase, if whatever you're worried about now, is it going to matter in a year? Is it going to matter in 3 months? Is it going to matter in 1 month?
It's so true. There's so many people that get caught up and like make a huge ordeal about these little things in their life that don't have any weight. And in a year from now, they're going to be looking back on that and being like,
why was I so stressed?
What was I so stressed about that for?
It's really, it's sad, and it, you know, because I've done that myself again. It's just,
we all have
been there. You just tear yourself up. I get it, you know, kind of the butterfly sensation, just tear me right here. It's like, ah, you know, the family feud when you get the answer wrong.
Oh,
just,
yeah. Argh! I mean, you give your power away in that moment, right? And that's what you got to be mindful about in the present, is to not give your power away to those things and let it rob you of your joy and those gifts.
And there's a lot out there to distract and rob from that, and you know, just to mostly get your money, right? And so it takes a little presence of mind, and again, deep breath, just to center. And actually, one of my favorite sayings, that maybe it was written or posted somewhere else, but I got it through my best friend who I live with. He's like my oldest best friend. I've known this fool since like second grade.
Wow.
Yeah, he's basically my other brother. Love that dude. And his dad, Roberto, old hippie cat, really funny dude. He told Eli, and I got it through Eli, that life takes place between breaths.
Oh.
And to me, it means that no matter what, you always have time to take at least one. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it should be like three good, solid, you know, frame inhales from all the way down here.
That's
and
right.
Really remember all these truths that are so easily robbed and distracted and misplaced from the fracas of everyday life. Just, oh, okay.
The noise. There's so much noise.
You can feed into it. You can fall into it. But it just, okay, I don't need to do all that. I've seen that movie before. I know where that goes. I'm just going to kind of...
So there's a recurring theme that's happening here through the conversation. I don't know if you've noticed this, but I'm picking up on it, is breath.
Yes.
Of taking a breath.
Absolutely.
That seems to be a big part of your rituals and routines in terms of how you go through your days and go through your life, is just to take a deep breath and to move into the next moment.
Yeah, and I guess I emphasize it so much because I haven't admittedly been very good at it for a long time. And, you know, the reason I get those butterflies and that sensation is because I'm like, oh, I'm just shallow breathing again.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that same moment. I was like, is it really that simple? Like, the reason I'm all like vibrating with anxiety right now is because I'm just shallow breathing and worrying about some BS that I know doesn't matter in the future. I'm like, what am I doing? Okay. And it's so wild to me how physiologically powerful that is.
Yeah.
And again, one of those moments, could it really be that simple? And at least moment to moment, what was the old saying? Keep it simple, stupid.
That's right.
The complications will come, trust.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll have time
those
to put that
on their own.
That developed brain of yours to really get in the pattern seeking things and do the puzzle that you need to do. But really, day to day, going from spot to spot, you got to breathe it out. And something that passing on, I think, is somewhere on Twitter online. It was this gal who had an idea: between every task, she would intentionally just sit. and be present, put the phone away and just like sit. And almost like, she called it a transition sit, I think. And just 3 to 5 minutes, and it's almost challenging, right? Like you can just think about doing
still.
That.
Yeah, because we're so used to the go, go, go.
It feels weird. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, wow, okay. So getting used to it.
Yeah.
And I try to do that also in the examine and remember that there's the stillness within you, regardless of the chaos without surrounding.
That's right.
And I try to do more things as well, like driving, like here, and you know, always have the music, right? Of course, it's just kind of meditating in a sense. Let your mind wander. And actually, I saw some study or something from NPR or whatever talking about, you know, one of the reasons I think maybe people are so stressed out is because the moments and the opportunities for us to just exist, we need that.
Yeah,
our brains were developed to kind of do that.
That's true.
And we need the quiet. We don't need this constant simulation.
The rest and digest, the parasympathetic. You're right.
Yeah,
that's part of the breath thing. It all connects and
exactly
goes full circle to that.
And yeah, there's so many of these, and we the rush to whip out the phone is. I have it too. It's wild, man. The magnetism.
It's the magnetism. And there's got to be a technological energy thing about it too, beyond just the addiction of wanting to get the dopamine hit.
Yeah, give me
there's got to be something, energy pull that I believe is happening too that we don't even fully understand yet in science.
Yeah.
Of like whatever, because all matter is just energy, right? If you zoom in on a microscope on it, it's just all moving particles anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And our acknowledgement of it is what brings it into reality. Right. So, I think about stuff like that all the time. And you can tell I've probably done a plant medicine retreat or two. But what I'm interested in and in hearing all about this and getting to know you better, which I find to be absolutely fascinating, is what does the future look like and what is the dream for Mario? Right? You're so outwardly focused and you are inwardly focused too, but you're outwardly focused on helping everybody and being compassionate and just bringing that level of that gift, I would say, to the world. Thanks. But what do you want for you?
I've been working on that with my therapist, Charles, actually. And it's funny that you mention it that way, you know, the outward and inward, because, you know, I've realized that part of my anxiety is almost overly attuned to what's going on around me and like trying to help others and stuff. I think, you know, love language growing up in my house, we weren't super affectionate, so it was acts of service, right? Just doing stuff for each other.
Well, you do well in my house. You want to come visit?
Yeah, right. Of course I love you, idiot. I filled up your gas tank. I don't do that for people I don't like.
Oh, man.
You know, so stuff like that. And so I realized I had that desire to like constantly help and go focus on others, and it would, you know, make me a little anxious. And so I realized my paradigm was sort of outward in, and I've been working to change that to sort of inward out. Because ultimately, if you yourself are more centered in a more healthy spot, you can help others better. Mm-hmm. It just, there's kind of the order of operations. You need to go inward first, settle that, because you're not even going to be that good of a help. Yeah. If you're yourself falling to pieces, you need to have yourself centered so then you can go out and help people. So working on that and trying to readjust that too and see what's going on, I'm going to harken back to a recent story. I was in Austin recently, as I just mentioned to you guys, coming in for the Eclipse Festival. And it was kind of a hippie electronic music festival in this beautiful park in outside of Austin a little ways.
Yeah.
And, I've been going to these festivals now with my festy bestie Garrett for like 10 years, and it was sort of an anniversary situation. And we had a great time, and obviously we've learned how to do this and do it well and better. And I realized that a lot of the lessons there end up being able to be extrapolated out. And so you have to have your stuff prepared. You have to know what you're getting in for. Marathon, not a sprint, all that kind of jazz. Have your water, have your food, get everything right. Well, the phrase, you know, luck is when preparation meets opportunity, right?
That's right.
So you got to have your stuff in order to take full advantage of the opportunities. And so, you know, not, you know, tooting our own horns too much, but feeling like we're experienced enough to know what preparations we need to have done so that we're in a good spot when those opportunities to get weird and get down and meet awesome, beautiful new people, where that can intersect beautifully. And what I ended up saying about the fest, I was like, man, I feel like every time we have a day, we're just end up meeting all these people, it's like, it does feel serendipitous. It almost feels a sense like fate. Mm-hmm. You're like, wow, that was just so perfect and beautiful. And they all kind of lined up and there was weird synergies and like a through line. And like, you know, when you have that lined up, and it seems like there's a lot of opportunities and like choices, right?
Yeah.
But when you have the thing kind of lined up and yourself aligned and everything, all those kind of fade away in a sense, because the path just kind of opens up and presents itself to you.
That's right.
when you have yourself aligned. You're saying, oh, well, actually, this is a pretty easy decision after all. So I'm trying to apply that currently. It's funny you ask this at such a moment because I'm working to extrapolate that now to my life and really find a way, because I do resent the choice professionally, broadly speaking, where it feels like the choice is really sell out or starve. Do you want to help people and struggle forever?
That's the or mentality.
Right, that's
There's our society has an or mentality when it should be and.
I don't want to do either of them, frankly.
There's a flow. Yeah. There's going to be seasons where you're going to freaking have a lot of abundance, and there's going to be seasons where you don't have a lot of abundance, right? The expansion and the contraction of it all. But society keeps trying to teach people and program people that it's an or situation. You're either broke or you're not, right? Or you're rich, right? And there is an and in between that is like you don't have to work until you're 80 and then retire, right? You can take mini retirements throughout your life. There's just such a different perspective that I've opened up through that. So you're still working on figuring out what that dream is. Frankly. And what's interesting about this, I want to point out to people that are watching this, as we come to the tail end of this, is that he is a healthy, grown, successful man who grew up in a great household, but he's openly talking about going to therapy. And there are people who have traumas, who have injuries, who have hurts, and who are walking around wounded, acting like adults, but actually they're adults, but they're acting like children.
Yeah.
And they refuse to go to therapy because our family doesn't do that. I've heard people say that. And they're afraid to go to therapy. So the fact that you're open, honest, and authentic in saying that you go to therapy with having the upbringing, the life, and the childhood, and the career that you've had, like, and going the traditional route, which is amazing. And that right there, I think, is the gift that people should be taking from this episode, is the fact that regardless whatever background or walk you come from, you should still get a therapist, you still get a counselor, because you still have to live in this world.
Absolutely.
And all these roadblocks that you could have in your way, and if you're trying to discover what your purpose and what your why is, there's no better way to do that than to doing introspection, and a therapist is going to help you do that.
1,000%. I'm a huge proponent of it. I think everyone should at least have a stint. You know, you're not going to be in it forever. And having someone with an objective perspective to ask the questions that you're too in it to realize and see from that perspective is invaluable as far as I'm concerned. And so would definitely recommend that, and just really kind of self-interrogating and checking yourself in a sense and checking in with yourself, all those other corny things. But it's really important. So I don't have the traumas, and I'm grateful that I didn't really have a lot of that growing up. And my heart breaks for people like yourself that had to go through that, because, you know, you're a little bit behind the starting line in a sense, and you got to make up some ground. But, you know, you don't want to over-focus on that, because people think like, oh, trauma made me who I am. And I'm sure the part to that,
there's truth.
But you don't want to glorify it at the same time. You got to walk that thin line, from what I understand. So it's just really the fact, recognition of the fact that we all have our own journeys. And look, this life is hard. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to deal with. And so no matter who you are, what you're going through, where you come from, why wouldn't you, don't you want to just kind of have someone to just, you know, just rap with? Their job is to listen to you.
That's right.
And frankly, I think a lot of people in this world could stand to learn how to listen and be listened to as well. It helps you listen to others to be listened to and felt and heard.
100%.
And seen in that way.
So to wrap it up, we want to do a challenge. Now, we talked a little bit about this on our initial call. So what, for people that are listening to this, every episode has a challenge, and this isn't any different. So Mario, what's your challenge for everybody?
So, with that spirit of compassion and empathy, and you know, it does take some work to get there, right? And so, one of the things I've been practicing, you know, speaking of driving, obviously, I think we all do a lot of that in our society. We're almost, speaking of the conditioning as well, it's we're almost conditioned to judge. You see, oh, what a stupid hat! You know, what is that shirt? Look at those shoes, man! What are those? It's really easy to do that. It's almost primed. Now, that's your almost reaction. So I'm fighting against that, and I challenge you to do the same, dear listener, to flip the paradigm there, flip it on its head, sort of, and instead, when you drive by, do in the most love gangster fashion possible, instead of this, drive by lovings, and just practice sending goodwill, good vibes, whatever you want to call it, genuine human empathy, love, compassion. Send it out to that person that you don't know, that you'll never know probably, see again in your whole life.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Even if they make you mad or cut you off or do something.
Especially almost, right?
That's right.
I see you, and you don't even have to hold up your hand, but even just practicing and just, hey man, I love you.
That's
like, just you're here, I'm here, thank you for being part of this crazy tapestry of the world. So recognition of that.
There's your challenge. I want you guys to report back to me in the comments in this video and on the podcast. I want to hear from you if you accomplish this challenge. Otherwise, you'd be swimming with the fishes, capiche?
Yeah.
So great job, brother. Thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Thanks for having.
We're going to have you back again for another episode, I'm sure. Ooh. And as always, thank you guys for watching. We'll see you guys on the next one. I'm Adrian Boysel. And as always, keep looking up.
I am joy. We came here to fill the void. I am love. I am peace. I am joy. That can never be destroyed. I am love. I am peace. I am joy. We came here to fill the void. I am love. I am peace. I am joy. That can never be destroyed. I am love. I am peace. Peace. Yeah. I want to see more joy, love, peace, and